Hare Krishna, everybody. So today we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 13, and this chapter is Divinity and Divine Service. Atapum dirvija shreshta.
Atapum dirvija shreshta.
Atapum dirvija shreshta.
Atapum dirvija shreshta.
Varnashram vibhagashasa.
Varnashram vibhagashasa.
Varnashram vibhagasha.
Varnashram vibhagasha.
Svanushtitasya dharmasya.
Svanushtitasya dharmasya.
Svanushtitasya dharmasya.
Svanushtitasya dharmasya.
Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
Atapum hirdvija shreshta.
Atapum hirdvija shreshta.
Varnashram vibhagasha.
Varnashram vibhagasha.
Svanushtitasya dharmasya. Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
Samsiddhir haritoshanam.
So if we could have like four devotees sing that don't usually sing. Like maybe two ladies and two men that don't usually sing. So, translation. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. So, does someone want to read? Maybe two people can read the purport, or just one person.
Human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. The four castes are the intelligent caste, the martial caste, the productive caste, and the laborer caste. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification, not by birth. Then again, there are four orders of life, namely the student life, the householder life, the retired, and the devotional life. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life, otherwise no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each and every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Varnashram Dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. The Varnashram institution is constructed to enable one to realize the absolute truth. It is not for artificial domination of one division over another. When the aim of life, i.e. realization of the absolute truth, is missed by too much attachment for indriya priti, or sense gratification, as already discussed herein before, the institution of the Varnashram is utilized by selfish men to pose an artificial predominance over the weaker section. In the Kali Yuga, or in the age of quarrel, this artificial predominance is already current. But the saner section of the people know it well that the divisions of caste and orders of life are meant for smooth social intercourse and high-thinking self-realization and not for any other purpose.
You can just finish it. It's really
good. Here in the statement of Bhagavatam is that the highest aim of life or the highest perfection of the institution of the Varnashram Dharma is to cooperate jointly for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13.
Om Agyan Siyam Dasya Yanam Janashlakaya Chakshur Unnitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Patale Shmati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Yiti Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Yavishisha Shunyavari Pashtatari Shtarani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shiva Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 So the title of this class that was given is Common Purpose Among Diverse People. So this verse in purport, they're talking about Varnashram system, and the word caste is used, but I do have to explain that our idea of caste now is different from what it traditionally was and what it's supposed to be. So it's caste system now is kind of a perverted reflection of what it should ideally be. And Prabhupada described an ideal society as being Daivi Varnashram, which is like divine Varnashram, where everybody works together in unity and there's no discrimination or like judgment on different people. Daivi Varnashram is actually a competition-less society. So here we're used to a society where it's full of competition. Everybody's trying to become the best, trying to fight against other people. You know, like it's always something. There's jealousy, there's envy, there's hatred, there's a lot of differences amongst people. So I was thinking about this material world and how even if you're really comfortable, even if you think you're really comfortable, that it's kind of like if you go to the store and you buy a new pair of shoes and they're really comfortable, but then there's a pebble in one of them. So like you're thinking, oh, that's great shoes, but somehow something's never really right. It doesn't feel quite right. So even if you feel like, oh, this material world's great, there's always something there, and it's a that temporary nature of this world, it's not lasting, and it's eventually going to bring you distress. So in this material world, we see people taking advantage of each other and enjoying at each other's expense. So the only way to really to bring unity to society is to have one common purpose. Like we see when people get together and they work for a common goal, then they actually can accomplish a lot. And we see that materially too. People do that. They get together and they work for a good cause. And you can see how that brings people together. So according to the Vedic scriptures and from what we've heard from Srila Prabhupada, the best way to bring the whole society together is to unite by worshiping the most worthy person. And the most worthy person is Krishna. He's the most kind, the most friendly, the most approachable, the most lovable, and he, as my father put it once, Krishna deserves to be happy because he's the best person. So it was a nice way of seeing it. Krishna is worthy of happiness. So we all want to serve him, and this common goal will bring us together. Srila Prabhupada said one of his last instructions was, "Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate amongst each other." So after he left his body, then that's how we were going to show our love for him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, in one of his books, he wrote this prophecy of, actually it's Lord Chaitanya's prophecy of having Krishna consciousness in every town and village. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, like, when will that day happen when Europeans, Americans, you know, Russians, Africans, they all get together and we all sing for Krishna together. Congregational chanting of the holy name. So it's that, again, that unity that brings us all together. Because we're all very diverse people, but that's that common goal. And we actually see that's happening now, that prophecy of the big temple in Mayapur to bring the whole world together to come and glorify Lord Chaitanya. So that that temple is happening now, and it's going to open in a few years. So it's really exciting. So I was listening to this lecture of Prabhupada where he was saying that, he says this in many lectures, but he was saying how God is for everybody. It's not a sectarian thing. It's not that, for example, the sun. It's not that you say, the American sun has risen, or the Indian sun is now risen. It's the sun is for everybody. It's not discriminate. So similarly, God is for everybody. And he's not Indian, he's not American, he's not, you know, he doesn't have any of those kind of categorizations. And the amazing thing about the spiritual world is that in the same lecture, Srila Prabhupada said that in this world, the master is always the master and the servant is always the servant. But in the spiritual world, the master can become the servant. And Krishna is so kind to with his devotees that he takes on that role. Sometimes he'll do service for his devotees. Like you can see in that picture where he's driving, not this particular one, but where he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. So he's taking on that service role for his friend. And in that lecture, Prabhupada said, Nanda Maharaj says to Yasoda, can your Krishna do anything? Because he's like a little boy at the time. So she wants to prove that Krishna can do something. So she said, go get your father's shoes. And so he goes and gets his, you know, he's little, apparently little and helpless, you know, little boy. So he's carrying his father's shoes. And it's so much love there that it seems that he is actually under the direction of his parents and doing it for them. Krishna is really like a good teacher too. Like if you think of a good professor, they think of each person in the class and they work with that particular person according to what they need. And they know how to fan that spark within each person. So Krishna is like that too. He reciprocates with each one of us individually. And he's very personable in that way. So each of us are going to have our different, even though we're all united spiritually in our one common goal of serving Krishna, we're each going to have our own flavor, our own distinct way of serving Krishna. So Krishna will be there for each one of those, and he'll take that service happily. Krishna is the all-attractive person, so that means that every single living entity in this world is attracted and drawn to Krishna. And even though they might not know it now, they're actually trying to find that again, that source of love and shelter. And they're trying to find it in different ways, but really what we're really drawn to is Krishna. And even Prabhupada was saying in this class that even the cows are attracted to Krishna, and they're like crying, you know, they want to be with Krishna, and they run up to Krishna, and he embraces them, and And Prabhupada said, actually, Krishna is attracted to the cows, too. So it's not just one way. It's not like, oh, we're all attracted to Krishna and he's indifferent. He's attracted to us, too. Is that two-way? So Krishna can enjoy in so many ways. He's unlimited. So his ability to enjoy is also unlimited. So he is really open and available for all kinds of service because he's ever expanding. So whatever service we want to do, he's ready to accept. So it's a constantly increasing world of opportunity. So I was thinking, actually one time my father asked a question to Prabhupada, and I won't go into the whole story, but Prabhupada's answer, he was talking about a garland, and he said that if you have a beautiful garland, there's no part of it that's insignificant. Even the leaf plays a role in that garland. So every flower is important. It's not like, oh, just the rose is, you know, important and everything else is. Because when they have it together, that's when it becomes beautiful. So when we all contribute together to serve Krishna, then it becomes a really beautiful garland for Krishna. Or if you think of a cooking example, like a cake or something, you wouldn't say, oh, I like sugar better, so I'll exclude the flour, you know. So it's like you want to have the whole cake, you need to throw in all the ingredients. Or a drama, like a really good drama. As soon as you're missing an actor, it just doesn't work as well. So it's a really nice meditation to think how all of us together can create something really wonderful for Krishna. And to try to encourage people as much as possible in whatever is their particular drive in life to do for Krishna. So another funny thing my father told me, because I talked to him on the phone about this topic, and he said, Krishna's always hiring. There's never any layoffs in the spiritual world. And there's always vacancy, there's always space and occupancy available for people. So it's not, you don't have to worry like, oh, the spiritual world's, you know, it's populated enough, and what am I going to do there? So, you know, that's a material idea of it. It's like, oh, you know, there's not going to be anything for me to do. So Krishna is always really eager to have everybody. And each one of us has our relationship with Krishna that nobody else can replace. So really, even though we're very insignificant, to Krishna we are very significant. So we should always remember that. Never get like despondent, think, oh, there's, you know, no service for me to do. Every slot's taken, kind of thing. So, and Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is already very kind, but Lord Chaitanya is even more kind. And Prabhupada described him as the most magnanimous incarnation. So he's just calling out to people, please just take this. This is going to change your whole life, your whole existence. And Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, they're just really, really opening the treasure house of Krishna Bhakti and giving it to everybody without even any qualifications. And whatever a person's motive is for coming to Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter to them. They just go, oh, wow, somebody's willing to serve Krishna. So there's this nice little excerpt from a book that Purijan Prabhu wrote on Srila Prabhupada called My Glorious Master. And this is where a girl says to Srila Prabhupada, I'm not sure if this is a reporter, it just says girl, colon. So, girl, Srila Prabhupada, would you please explain why Krishna consciousness hadn't come to the West until now? Why didn't it come earlier? And Prabhupada replied, because you were not born. After your birth, we have come here to take you back to home, back to Godhead. Now take the opportunity. Come with us. We were waiting for your birth. It was a really touched when I read that, because I literally just opened up to that place in the book, and it was really, really touching. So Srila Prabhupada exemplifies that mood of really trying to engage everybody in Krishna's service. And he was so accommodating to everybody. So he says in his purport on the holy name, there's that famous purport where he's talking about describing the glories of the holy name. He says, this is a transcendental sound vibration. Everybody can take part in it. It doesn't matter about qualification. Even a child can take part in this chanting. Even a dog, that's what he says in there. So it's really nice. So I was going to tell you a little story about a child and then a dog to exemplify these points. So, one child that was the first child in ISKCON was Saraswati. She was Malati Prabhu's daughter. She is Malati Prabhu's daughter. So, Prabhupada was always very encouraging to her, and he loved taking her places when they went. They went to India, and she would go with them. And she was such a hit amongst all the Indian people. She was like a little blonde girl dancing. And so it was a really, he would engage her, he would encourage her in her spiritual life. One time he hid a little deity of Krishna behind his back and was like, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna, Saraswati? She was like looking all around the room, and he was just increasing her love for Krishna in fun ways. And another story of a little girl, she was about four, I think, was Srivas Thakur's niece, and her name was Narayani. And one time Lord Chaitanya was in a group of devotees, and he said, he told the devotees, I'm going to exemplify the potency of chanting Hare Krishna, that everybody can feel that ecstasy of chanting if they chant with sincerity. So he said, this little girl was there, and he said, Narayani, chant Hare Krishna and feel and cry with love for Krishna. And just the fact that Lord Chaitanya told her that, it was immediately she was at the level of prema. So she started dancing and crying, and like this little girl, and all the devotees were just amazed. It was such a special situation. And then in terms of a dog, so here's an example. There's a few in scripture of animals that can also take part. And this story, Shivananda Sen was going to Jagannath Puri, and he was traveling there to see Lord Chaitanya. And this dog just joined the party of devotees. He was like a street dog. You know, like in India, this is one of those street dogs. It's probably not very attractive, you know. But he was really kind of humble. He was following the group. And Shivananda Sen saw that. So he told the devotee to feed him, to take care of the dog. So every day they would give the dog some rice, something like that. And one day the person forgot to give the dog the rice. And so the dog disappeared. And Shivananda Sen was actually a really compassionate, kind person. And he was concerned, like, where's that dog? So he actually didn't eat all day. He was, like, just chanting and, like, feeling really bad that he hadn't taken better care of this animal. And so when they arrived in Jagannath Puri, surprisingly, the dog was there with Lord Chaitanya. So when they arrived, they saw Lord Chaitanya was eating coconut. And this dog was sitting next to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was taking the remnants of this coconut. It was a green coconut. And he was throwing it to the dog. And the dog was just in ecstasy eating it. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, "Chant, Ram, Krishna, Hari." And the dog was actually chanting. And all the devotees were just spellbound and amazed and seeing this interaction between Lord Chaitanya and this dog. So anybody that Lord Chaitanya came in contact with would automatically be filled with love for Krishna because he was so overflowing with it. So this dog actually was immediately liberated, and so the next day they didn't see the dog anymore because the dog had gone back to the spiritual world. So it's a really sweet story. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then I want to share a story from this book. This is Miracle on Second Avenue by Mukunda Maharaj, and this is like one of my favorite books now. It's such a good book. There's a couple copies in the library if you ever want to read it. So this story is an example of how Prabhupada engaged everybody. And of course many of you know the story, but I'll just read it to give you it's kind of a nice description of it. So Mukunda Maharaj writes, "I was sitting with everyone else on the rug trying to listen attentively." So this was a lecture Srila Prabhupada was having. "I noticed the drunk come in out of the corner of my eye. His stench hit me, and I exchanged glances with the other regulars. I didn't want to interrupt the Swami and make a scene by throwing him out. Also, I didn't think it would be very kind or loving or spiritual to remove him, even though I found his presence offensive. I couldn't be certain if the Swami was bothered by him or if he even noticed." They used to call Prabhupada the Swami in the early days. So this is in New York. "The unwelcome visitor stumbled resolutely toward the Swami's sitting place. We all just sat there as if suspended in time, anxiously watching the odd and potentially dangerous situation unfold. The drunk reached the lectern, groping inside his coat for something. What would it be? A rock? A knife? A gun? I was ready to spring forward if anything untoward happened. After a few seconds that seemed like eons, the man withdrew his hand and pulled out a roll of packaged toilet paper. He plunked it down on the lectern in front of the Swami. 'What is this?' the Swami asked. The drunk spun around and teetered away to the center of the room, where he fell into a cross-legged position on the rug. The Swami smiled at his strange guest. 'Thank you very much,' he said. 'Thank you. Thank you.' Then he looked out at his audience. 'Just see,' he said. 'It is a natural tendency to give some service. Just see. He's not in order, but he thought, here is something. Let me give some service. That is Dharma.'" And then basically the Swami started leading kirtan, and the drunk, you know, started dancing really wildly. And then Mukunda Maharaj adds, "Two nights later, he turned up at the temple. But this time he was sober and respectably dressed, his hair combed, his trousers pressed, his face cleanly shaved. He sat through most of the Swami's lecture, and I thought that the Swami's kindness and gratitude must have won him over." So that was a sweet little story. And Prabhupada did that so many times. He would encourage all kinds of service, even bringing toilet paper to the devotees. So a few other examples. There was a Brahmin in South India, and he wasn't actually able to read very well, but every day he would take the Bhagavad Gita and he would sit in the temple and he would read, in his way of doing it, the Bhagavad Gita from beginning to end. And Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India at the time, and he came across this Brahmin, and the Brahmin would cry with love for Krishna when he was reading this Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya said, "What is it about the Bhagavad Gita? Which part of the Bhagavad Gita is making you cry like that? What is it?" And the Brahmin said, "I'm actually not able to read. I'm doing this because my spiritual master told me, but I'm not really able to read. Sometimes I read incorrectly." And people would laugh at him, his pronunciation and stuff. So he said, "But it's this vision of like of Krishna driving the chariot of Arjuna that is just touching my heart so much. This that he's become the servant of his friend, you know, of doing this service role for his friend. And that vision is just in my mind. I can't think of anything else." And it's so he was crying because of that. And he was having such a deep realization, even though he couldn't read very well. And Lord Chaitanya said, "You have actually understood the purport of Bhagavad Gita." So, and then on the other side of the spectrum, so it's not, okay, so this is Lord Chaitanya's mercy to people who might not even seem mundanely intelligent. And then on the other side, he had devotees like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who were extremely intelligent, so like scholars. And there's many other devotees like that, that he also enjoyed interacting with. So he enjoyed interacting with all kinds of devotees. And he would interact with them individually. Another example is Kulavecha Sridhar. He was actually a shopkeeper, and he also was very simple, and he would sell banana leaves. And Lord Chaitanya would always come and tease him and try to get a good deal, even though he was already selling them so cheap. And basically just for the interaction of that loving exchange. And Kulavecha Sridhar would never have wanted Lord Chaitanya to not come. You know, he really enjoyed that interaction. And and then on the other side of that, you could say like King Prataparudra. He was a great king, but he also had that personal relationship with Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. So you can see there's room for all kinds of different people and for their different roles. So in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness doesn't start by seeing. It's not with seeing that you can see Krishna. It's not with your eyes, but it's with the tongue. And he was actually speaking about chanting. So that our way of pleasing Krishna and our way of actually eventually seeing Krishna is with the tongue, the chanting of the holy names. He said it's not that you can just go, oh, I'm going to see God and see him. It comes with that whole mood of humility and service and love. And you purify your senses by rendering service. In Bhagavad Gita 6:30, and I don't know if anybody knows this verse, the Sanskrit, but the English is, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Does anybody know the Sanskrit to that? So in the purport, this is actually one of my favorite verses now because it's the purport is just incredible. And Prabhupada says, when one reaches this level of Krishna, this really advanced level of Krishna consciousness where Krishna becomes everything to the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. So it's not like you merge. We're not about merging with Krishna, but it's so deeply connected that it's one and different. So that amazing relationship. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. One time, a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, is Allen Ginsberg your guru? Because Allen Ginsberg had come around a lot and was around Prabhupada a lot. And he kind of asked it in a challenging way. So is Allen Ginsberg your guru? Are you Allen Ginsberg's guru? Because Allen Ginsberg had been coming around to Prabhupada's programs. And Prabhupada replied in a very humble way. He said, I am nobody's guru. I am everybody's servant. And then, this is in the same book, Mukunda Maharaj said, Prabhupada got even quieter, and he kind of almost said it to himself. And he said, actually, I'm not even a servant. To be a servant of God is no ordinary thing. So of course we realize that Prabhupada is a pure devotee, he's saying this as an instruction for us, to never take it for granted that we can serve Krishna. And it's such an amazing, amazing gift to have. One time, my father was in L.A., and Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture. So I've heard this story many times because he's told me. Prabhupada was saying that by taking initiation from the spiritual master, you become deathless. And then he said, of course people are going to ask, what do you mean deathless? You're still going to die. And Prabhupada replied, I mean, he was saying this, you know, as if someone had asked him. And he said, that is not death. For a devotee, that is not death. It's something like sleeping. Then, when you wake up, and his eyes got really big in this lecture, and my father was there, he was like, it was this moment of, you know, kind of a moment there. So when the devotee wakes up, it's Vaikuntha. And so it's kind of this really beautiful way of thinking about death, too. For a devotee, it's not scary. It's a really a beautiful moment where you become so in love with Krishna that you are just ready for that next step. And that's a really, this is kind of the result of pleasing Krishna. So together as a, what I'm trying to say is that together as a group we can please Krishna, and this is kind of the result of it. So the result is that we will reach the spiritual world where time is inconspicuous by its absence. And every step is a dance, every word is a song, every day is a festival. And it's such a joyful thing to look forward to. Even right now we're having so much fun. Like even in this material world, despite all of the trials and tribulations of this material world, we can have such an amazing experience serving Krishna together. And really, one of the greatest joys is when we can really encourage every devotee in their capacities and really be there for each other. And sometimes when a devotee passes away, we realize that every single devotee is like so important to our, you know, in our association. And so never to be taken for granted. Every single one of us, every single one of you is just such a valuable asset to the ISKCON movement. So we have that to look forward to. We're creating that spiritual world here, and then at the same time we have that spiritual world to look forward to where there's no ulterior motives. Everybody's working in harmony for Krishna. And it's such a exciting thing to look forward to. Because there's never any, even if there's competition in the spiritual world, it's competition for Krishna. And the thing that we have to understand is sometimes I think when we talk a lot about serving Krishna, some people might think that it sounds like it's a one-way street, like, oh, we're serving, he's the master, we're the servant. But it's really, it's just part of who we, it's just us, that is us, is to serve. And it's not by serving that we're losing out somehow. It's actually we're gaining more than we could gain any other way. And that service is what actually makes Krishna indebted to his devotee. So that the pure devotee is has this amazingly deep relationship with Krishna that we can't even understand. And one time when Srila Prabhupada was, he arrived in Atlanta, and this was the when they installed the Gornitai deities in Atlanta, and they had installed them. It was, I think it was 75.
Yeah,
and you were there? Yeah, so I was actually going to play it, but then I thought people can listen to it on their own. This recording, it's like 2.5 minutes long of Srila Prabhupada's arrival address. And it's just such an amazing recording where you can see that amazing relationship between a pure devotee and Krishna, where he's realizing how incredible it is that Lord Chaitanya has spread the holy name all over the world. And so in that lecture, in that introduction, he actually breaks down and he is talking about how kind and loving Lord Chaitanya is, and he gets like choked up. It's a really amazing. So if you ever want to hear it, I have that, and you can ask me, I can give it to you. So does anybody have any questions?
That event, the Bodhis had just finished hammering together the Vyasasana before he walked in the door.
Really?
And the temple was very full of devotees, not just from Atlanta, but from different places. But the deities were in Taiwan, the main deities at that time, and some deities since it's all Radha Krishna. But seeing that sight, like you were saying, this very packed room full of people he'd never met before, most of them. And the same Lord Chaitanya that Prabhupada mentioned, you are very overwhelmed. He said that Lord Chaitanya is even more kind than Krishna, which is, when you hear a superlative applied to Krishna, it's kind of surprising. But he said Lord Chaitanya is even more kind than Krishna. Krishna demands, sarva dharmam parityaja, you must surrender to me. But Lord Chaitanya is so kind, he does not demand. And that's when he just choked out. So please try to support. Thank you very much. This is arrival address. But yeah, I think you're right. It would be very nice. I always like to hear that. I was going to ask you about the question of diversity. How do how does it practically work when people are very, very different backgrounds and different perspectives, and they have different, so they have differences of opinion, and people naturally rub each other the wrong way. How do you practically apply Krishna consciousness when you're in a conflict with another person?
I'm sure there's many different angles to that question, answers to that. One would be just a practical way to do it would be to get a third person involved that might be able to mediate between devotees. And because it's definitely going to be, we're all in this material world, there's definitely going to be awkward moments and tensions and all that kind of thing. So just to try to do that in as honest and positive approach as possible. So where you actually bring two people together and a third person kind of works with them instead of like this, you know, criticizing behind people's back and kind of passive-aggressive, that's not very helpful. Another thing would be to remember that, I think it helps to remember that every person, to really try to focus on how everybody is loved by Krishna. And so even if you kind of really appreciate that person, to remember that that person is actually really dear to Krishna, and even if I, you know, I'm having issues, but somehow to offer respect to that person just because of their connection with Krishna. And to try to take that humble, if possible, to try to take that humble position where you try to find the good in that person and work with them in an amicable way. So
remember that Krishna loves jerks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to make a comment about that subject too. I don't know if there's my... Well, I was listening to a class recently on this subject, and I was hearing that basically our very like things we have to offer Krishna, you know, like our individual service is also on the flip side, it's reflected by our weaknesses and our shortcomings, you know, like say really somebody that say really they don't like change. They don't want to change, you know, and they're really like, they're really like, at the same time, they're very steady. You know, you can count on them, per se, to be a very steady servant of Krishna, you know, be there every day. I mean, whereas when, if there's a situation that requires an adaptation and change, it might not be able to, like, react so well, but in other situations, they're an amazing servant. And the same thing, you know, like, with creative people, you know, artists, like they can make beautiful pictures for Krishna, you know, and like beautiful creations. But at the same time, they're notorious for like being off of deadline. You know, it's just like that's the way it is, you know. And in Krishna consciousness, we have to sort of see how people how they serve Krishna and really appreciate that how what their role is in serving Krishna, and then have patience, you know, for those weaknesses, and understand that's why we're a community. It's because we all have our own strengths, and we can all work together to help each other, you know. Maybe somebody shouldn't, you know, pack their bags, let somebody else pack their bags because they're so forgetful or something, you know, and stick to their strengths, you know. It's really a matter of understanding what all our strengths are and just really appreciating. And helping bring that out in each other.
Nice, yeah, thank you. I was going to, just going to add to that quickly that I've often thought, and I haven't really started working on it yet, but I would like to do this one day, is to actually start kind of a journal of all the devotees I meet in my life and what each of them does kind of contributes to my life or what I've learned from them. And so basically a gratitude journal for devotees. So that each person that we come across actually can be an amazing asset, and we can learn something from all of them. So, thanks.
Back to address the issue of the spiritual caste system. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, I was reading, you know, Marx and Engels and, you know, what have you. And I really had a problem with this initially. I was like, you know, I thought it was ridiculous that there was some sort of social order. But then as I started to read Prabhupada's books more and more, I was like, okay, I understand. You know, he uses the analogy of, you know, the Brahmins are the head down to the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas and the Sudras to the feet, you know. But certain people may have a problem with individuals in elevated positions. They might be envious of that. So how does one help to dispel that envy?
Of the other classes in that different, well, in a really happy, fulfilled society, I think everybody is content with where they're at. So it's not even a question of like, oh, I wish I could be a Kshatriya because they seem to get more money or whatever. You know, like I think it's that everybody's totally suited to their individual, to that particular role. So they're not artificially in some kind of situation where they're feeling a lack of something. And that's why today the caste system is a perverted reflection of it, because people are just born into it, and whether or not you fit, you're just kind of...
Well, I mean, I just meant like the spiritual caste, because you know there's going to be, like I said, individuals in the spiritual caste system that are going to be, you know, jealous or envious of the higher up. So not like the social caste system that we know today.
Yeah. But then if it's a spiritual system, then there won't be that, because automatically everybody's going to be... They all know that their role is very important. So, for example, a brahmana appreciates the sudras. So the sudras are going to feel totally happy with that role. There's not going to be any jealousy because they're all working together for Krishna. So, yeah.
I just got to add that, that the real problem in this situation for that person who's envious isn't that, oh, well, let's give this person a higher position, or if he actually gets that person's position, that now they're going to be satisfied. Because the root cause of their problem is that envy that they have in their heart. And as long as they're carrying that, it doesn't matter how high up of a position they go. Look at Hirani Kashipu and Kamsa. I mean, they were in like some of the highest positions you could possibly be materially. But when they still had those qualities in their heart, they were never satisfied. No one could ever satisfy that hunger. So it's not that the position itself is what is going to affect the person's happiness. It's that they've got that envy rooted in their heart, no matter what position they're in. So in a spiritual sense, everybody takes their roles and serving Krishna and becoming satisfied, not based on their position, but just that they're situated properly, regardless of which position they're in.
Yeah, I'm just going to add one thing to that. There's a really nice book called Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. It's actually in three volumes now by Gopi Pranadan Puru. And this, there's a few, two journeys of different devotees going, kind of searching for the devotees that are dearest to Krishna, in one sense. So it seems to be this hierarchy of devotees, like, oh, you know, I'm not so worthy, go visit Prahlad Maharaj, oh, go visit, you know, like up and up. It seems to be this hierarchy, but that's from our material point of view. But really, if you... By the time you get to like the most advanced devotees, the gopis, and if you ask them like, oh, are you the dearest to Krishna? They would immediately say that, like, the interesting thing about the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is they would have immediately said, oh, that Brahman down there on earth is, you know, like it would be the cycle. It's never that anybody feels like, oh, finally I'm at the top. They always feel like this that they're the servant of. So
I'm just gonna add that. Let me take this topic, how the difference between approaching a material man to serve him and approaching a spiritual man. When you approach a material man, he basically thinks, okay, how can I exploit this person? How can I squeeze everything out of him? How can I shift and blame the person if something goes wrong? But if you approach a spiritual man to serve him, he's thinking, well, how can I give shelter? How can I give protection? How can I encourage and how can I engage this person? And how can I empower him? And you analyze Krishna or Chaitanya's or Prabhupada's or any devotees with a relationship with someone who approaches them, you'll see that that's what they try to do. They empower them, to encourage them, and give shelter and protection. So it's actually a joyous process to approach the spiritual man to do some service as compared to approaching a material man to do service.
Yeah, nice point.
I also just want to add that even here in the Hare Krishna movement, we can, you know, it's such a dangerous or even sad thing to be envious or jealous of someone else's service, because you can miss the opportunity for service that Krishna's putting right in front of your face. Like, okay, someone else gets to give class and I don't get to give class, or someone else gets to do this and I don't get to do this, or I'm not at that, I just have to do this one menial thing, but they're always over there chanting and that would be nice. But then we miss, you know, the devotee standing right next to us, the Krishna Buddha's next to, and they're actually having a hard time and they need to talk, and I'm the person that's supposed to talk to them. Or that thing that keeps occurring in my mind, man, somebody should really do something about that. And it's like Krishna again and again cueing you, like, you should take care of this thing. And we can miss that special connection with Krishna, that direct connection, by being envious of someone else's service.
Yeah, good point. Actually, wherever we are in life, it's really a good practice to think, or to kind of try to see Krishna's hand in that particular situation. Like, what does Krishna want from me now? What can I do now to serve? You know, that's a nice, like, what am I missing now? If I'm thinking this, then what am I missing right here that I could be doing for Krishna? That's really nice. Anybody else?
There is one more thing I heard in the lecture yesterday about envy. Maharaj said, Dalai Maharaj said that envy towards any other devotee, if we have a little bit of jealousy also, that is basically towards Krishna.
Mm.
We are envious of the opulence. Some other person is exhibiting in terms of anything, like good speaking, like giving a wonderful class, or anything like good spiritual quality. So that's actually coming from Krishna. So if you are envious of that person, we should not be mistaken. That's actually envy towards only that person. It's actually envy towards Krishna that we are exhibiting.
Yeah.
So we have to solve that problem.
So it's kind of, if that happens and you feel that, wow, I'm really envious or I'm really jealous, instead of becoming really despondent, the way you can handle that is to think, okay, wow, I'm noticing it. At least now I'm noticing it. And it must be because I'm cleaning it. My heart's getting cleaned, and that's why these things are coming up, because of chanting. So when that happens, then you can just go, oh, Krishna, now I really need your help because I'm seeing this, and I really don't want this anymore. So then you can really, really call out to Krishna in japa and kirtan.
The verse we're reading about how that we can attain the highest perfection if we follow the spiritual and social orders. Can we even have perfection if we don't take up, like, you know, brahmachari, take up, you know, the spiritual work in our nowadays we're being educated to all become sudras, you know, working for someone else. So can we perfect our life if we're not engaged nicely?
Do you mean like according to our particular abilities and our
nature?
Yeah,
according to the caste orders of life.
Yeah, definitely. Because
we can become perfect anyway?
Yeah, if we're doing this process of bhakti yoga, then it really, it actually goes beyond this system of the varnas. So if you're like... on the path of bhakti yoga and you're not totally fitting in where you should be, you can still reach perfection if you're serving Krishna. Because in one sense, this is secondary to really being devotional service. But it's better, it's more conducive. See, that's the thing, it's more conducive for our spiritual lives if we're in a situation that's helpful. But it's not absolutely necessary. Sometimes we have to go out of our comfort zone too. See, the thing is that our main goal together is to share what we have been given with others. So sometimes we're going to have to go out of that particular, you know, oh, I feel better just reading all day instead of, like, you know, working hard in the garden. But I'm going to do that because it's going to please Krishna. So that goes beyond varnashram system. Yeah, so on the concluding note, I just want to thank all of you for being who you are. And it's been really, really nice living here. And I really appreciate each one of you. So thank you for your association. All right.